And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is looking backward, looking forward. My first guest is the Dean of the Robertson School of Government in Virginia. We reviewed the top political stories of 2010. My next guest is the news director at Alabama Public Radio. He's covered more than 100 space shuttle missions for NPR, including the 1986 Challenger accident and the loss of the space shuttle Columbia. We're going to discuss NASA's future and the reasons we need to go to Mars. If you want to join in the conversation or if you just want to talk space, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Pat Duggins, as I mentioned, is the news director at Alabama Public Radio. He's also the author of Final Countdown, NASA and the End of the Space Shuttle Program. He's covered more than 100 space shuttle missions for NPR starting in 1986, if you can believe that. Pat has been the voice of NASA coverage for NPR since 1996, and he's provided all of the coverage for the space shuttle missions, including missions with the United States, Russian, Chinese, and other nations on board. Pat's latest book is titled Trailblazing Mars, NASA's Next Great Leap. Welcome to the show, Pat. How are you today?
Pretty good, Bill. How about you?
I am doing terrific, and space has always been a fascinating subject for me. Baby boomer myself, so I grew up in the space race. I knew all about that, and of course, President Kennedy laid it out as our goal for the decade was to get a man to the moon and return him safely. So now that the space shuttle program has come to an end, and let's face it, NASA and space exploration right now are very morbid. Why is now a good time to ramp up for a race to Mars?
Well, NASA's got a fresh slate right now, Bill, because with the shuttle going away, it's a sad thing. A lot of jobs are going to be lost at Kennedy Space Center, which is going to be a bad thing for the workers involved. But the space shuttle has basically trapped NASA in Earth orbit for 30 years. We couldn't go back to the moon now if we wanted to. I mean, you could put a gun to NASA's head, and there's no way they could do it with the space shuttle. So now that we're moving away from that and possibly developing a new heavy-lift launch rocket, which is kind of like a new version of the Saturn V that you and I grew up with during Apollo, there's the possibility of sending human beings out of Earth orbit to go off and do something that NASA's been lacking in terms of a real mission for almost 30 years.
And it has been lacking a mission. The whole space shuttle program in and of itself was controversial. For listeners who might not know the controversy of the different camps within NASA, lay it out for us. What has been the challenge, the tug of war between deeper exploration into space and, as you say, Earth orbit?
Oh, absolutely. Now, when Apollo 11 happened, back when you and I were kids, the second that Neil Armstrong's little toe hit the moon, all of a sudden, whoosh, that sound you heard was NASA's budget going away, because we had achieved the goal that had been set by NASA and by Congress and by John F. Kennedy, beat those darn Russians to the moon. We did that. So all of a sudden, NASA's money starts going away. Now, the space agency was sort of painted into a corner. It's like, well, if we can't do Apollo, what are we going to do? So they started shopping around for ideas, and one they came up with was, okay, well, why don't we sort of build a reusable spacecraft, a space shuttle, and then we'll put up a space station, and then, as the name implies, the shuttle will shuttle back and forth, carrying up people and supplies. Well, Congress looked at that, and they had they had sticker shock over the possible cost, so they said, okay, fine, forget the space station. We'll give you half the money you want to build your shuttle, so go off and be happy with that. So what they had was a sort of semi-reusable space plane that it's the most sophisticated flying vehicle that's ever been conceived, but still it's technically challenging. If there's a rainstorm, it can't launch. Two shuttle accidents, 14 astronauts are dead, that sort of thing. So NASA was sort of stuck with this space vehicle that could orbit the Earth but do nothing else. So now the shuttle's going away. It's a chance for NASA to kind of go back, reclaim the mission that it's been lacking for almost three decades, and try and go off and do something new.
Well, we're talking to Pat Duggins, everybody, who is the news director at Alabama Public Radio. We're talking about the mission to Mars. And, Pat, it's not as easy as you make it sound. There are some significant challenges if we do want to send somebody to Mars and return them safely. So lay it out for us. What are some of the challenges that we face if we want to do that task?
Well, there are technical challenges and there are political challenges, because going to Mars will be enormously expensive, and any democracy has got to have the debate on whether or not we really want to do this, because it's going to cost lives. It's going to cost billions of dollars to do, and there are people out there who are wondering, okay, well, you know, go to Mars, well, for what? That sort of thing. So you got to get past the political hurdles in Washington. We have a huge deficit. We have to address that. So are we going to do that? Number one, the technical issues on this is that, you know, we've been orbiting the Earth for about 30 years, but going away from the Earth is completely different. That's why you need the new heavy lift launch rocket, which incidentally would be, you know, managed and built here in Alabama. So once you do that, then you've got to worry about, okay, going to the moon for NASA was almost like taking a summer vacation. In other words, you pack a big lunch, you kind of go there, you come back. When the food runs out, you come back to Earth. Same thing with the space shuttle, same thing with the space station. When you send people to the surface of Mars, it's more like trailblazing the American West in the late 18th and 19th centuries, which is why I gave my new book that title, Trailblazing Mars. You're going to have to be able to rely on your technology. You're going to have to solve your own problems. And if you're halfway to Mars, which is like a six-month one-way trip, and your ship breaks down, I mean, what do you think Houston's going to do? I mean, we'll send the AAA to help you out there. Leave the hood up on your spaceship so they know that it's you. Those people are going to be in trouble unless they can rely on their technology. So NASA has got to decide they really want to do this. The American people have to decide that they really want to pay for this, and then they've got to do something in order to be able to build up the technology they need that they can trust during these really, really long missions when you're talking about going back and forth to Mars.
Okay. Now, you talk about the technology. You're going to have to talk about double and even triple redundancy and systems and things like that. How long will it take for us to really develop the technological aspects for us to be able to go to Mars?
Well, when President Obama came into office, he called together a group of people. It was called the Augustine Commission. It was headed up by Norman Augustine, who used to be in charge of Lockheed Martin, and said, you know, lay out scenarios for NASA to what we might do something in the future for NASA. So what they did was they came up with a number of different ideas, and what really impressed me was that one of them actually factored in public relations. In other words, if you send astronauts on a mission, forget Mars for right now, but if you send astronauts on a mission to an asteroid, you can actually test out some of the technology that you would need for a long-term mission to Mars, but you could go to an asteroid in, say, 10 years. So there's actually an end game. NASA's actually doing something so that a fickle Congress and a disinterested public would actually know that their space program is accomplishing something. And then once you test all of your technology on the asteroid, then you can set your sights on the more ambitious trip, which would be the long-term voyage to the planet Mars. Again, you know, NASA's going back and forth on this. Congress is, swearing in new members of Congress tomorrow, and the Republican majority is going to have a lot to say on how we're going to reduce the deficit. It's possible that NASA may not get all of the funding that the Obama administration has been talking about. It may take longer to achieve these goals. We sort of have to watch the dust settle in Washington a little bit in terms of how much money NASA is going to get, if any at all, and then how they're going to be able to spend that to achieve any of these goals.
Oh, very good. And I'm glad you brought up the whole public relations side of things, Pat, because that's an area that I wanted to explore as well. I mean, here we are. We're sitting on planet Earth, which is 70% ocean. And what do you say to the space exploration critics that say 70% of our own planet remains to be explored? Why aren't we spending some of those dollars to explore the oceans and learn more about where it is we live already?
That's part of that debate that we have to have as a democracy in order to figure out, do we actually want to do this, or do we want to explore the depths of the ocean? I'll tell you this much, though. You get congressmen together that really dislike NASA, and there are some congressmen who like it and some congressmen who don't, and you take the congressmen who don't like NASA and you get them drunk or something like that, and ask them what they really think, and they will probably tell you that most technological advances in the United States happen when we go to space or when we go to war. Now, in no way, shape, or form, see, I'm an Air Force kid, so there's no way that I'm going to, downplay any of the contributions by our servicemen and women right now over in Afghanistan and Iraq. But if you were president and you had the choice between sending someone's son or daughter into harm's way or, letting an overachiever put on a space helmet and go fly around in orbit or something like that, which would you choose in order to be able to get all these technological advances for the United States? But again, do we want to spend that money? Do we want to take those risks, that sort of thing? Or do we want to spend that on exploring the ocean floor? It's something that we simply have as a people to get together and talk about and decide what we want to do.
We need to have the public debate. We're talking to Pat Duggins, everybody. He's the news director at Alabama Public Radio. He's also the author of the book Trailblazing Mars, NASA's Next Great Leap. Let's continue down this PR path, if we can, for just one more minute. And in your estimation, Pat, you've been covering this for more than a dozen years, space and exploration and so forth. What is it going to take to excite the American people about reaching Mars? What's going to get our juices flowing for us as a nation to want to do this?
Well, let me give you an A answer and a B answer to that. Number one, I think that if you ask scientists, The one thing they'll tell you is that going to Mars and sending human beings to Mars would probably solve the most basic question that we have about the red planet, and that is, does life exist there now, or did it exist at some time in the distant past? Now, we're sending up robots, and we've got, like, you know, the Mars rover Spirit and Opportunity, and they're crawling around, and they're doing a great job. They've done a lot in terms of science. But most of the people who I've spoken to in terms of finding actual evidence of current or previous life on Mars will tell you that the only way you're going to be able to do that is to go to areas that either are geologically active or were geologically active, and those areas have, like, ravines and crevasses, and they're just too dangerous for a robot. In other words, you send a robot to the edge of the Grand Canyon, it might topple over. However, an astronaut would have the good sense to back up. So you have to go to areas like that to really find the evidence of previous life, or so the scientists say. On the political side, and this is a concern that was raised in my first book, Final Countdown, that, for example, if we choose not to go back to the moon, which, you know, the Obama administration says they don't want to do, or if we don't want to go on to Mars, there are other powers in this world that are pursuing space exploration as we speak. You've got China and you've got Russia, and the Chinese have said point blank they want to land a man on the moon. Now, if we choose not to go to the moon, which is perfectly fine, we have the right not to do that. However, the concern was raised to me that if people actually are able to get to the surface of the moon, they could go to any of the Apollo landing sites and take any of the artifacts that are there, and there are just a treasure trove of items that were left up there by the astronauts, put them in a museum, sell them on eBay, put them in a private collection, and the United States could grouse about it but really couldn't do anything about it. So I'm kind of curious if China's space ambitions are really going to try and create a new space race between the United States and another foreign power. No guarantees, but as a writer of this stuff, I'm kind of curious to see how that turns out.
Interesting. And it's not like maritime law, Pat, where we would have the rights to it simply because we owned it at one point.
Excellent point, because I looked into that myself. The way it's been explained to me, international treaty says that nobody owns the moon. In other words, you can't, you know, Neil Armstrong, when he put the American flag up there in 1969, that does not mean the United States owns the moon. But international salvage law that you were just discussing apparently is so murky that if physically you could get to the moon, that's always been the big deal. I mean, the stuff that's up there has been pretty safe because no one's actually been able to go up there and do anything. But the Chinese say they're going to do that. And apparently international salvage law is so murky that if you could physically get to the surface of the moon, anything that's there you could walk off with. And when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were getting ready to blast off after taking the first steps on the moon, NASA wasn't sure their ship would take off. So what they instructed the astronauts to do was, you keep your moon rocks with you, you keep the spacesuits on your backs, but everything else goes out the hatch. So you've got trenching tools, unused food packs, Hasselblad cameras, two spare spacesuits that were all thrown out of the vehicle, and they're in a scatter zone around the outside of where the spaceship took off. And any archaeologist will tell you that an artifact is worthless if you can't know where it was when you found it. So they just don't want anybody just walking up there and start messing around with those artifacts, otherwise they might be lost to the world.
Oh, great. We're talking to Pat Duggins, everybody, author of the book Trailblazing Mars, NASA's Next Great Leap. And my question then turns to the whole idea of space tourism, because that's becoming very in vogue. And I realize that that's Earth orbit type of stuff, very similar to what the space shuttle was doing itself. But you've got Virgin Galactic out there. A California businessman paid $20 million to go into space with Russia. What do you see as the future for space tourism and low Earth orbit sort of fun family flights?
Well, I mean, if you saw, for example, the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, or did somebody ever drag you to see that?
Actually, I have not seen it in its entirety, but go on. I know what you're talking about.
No sweat. Well, the very beginning of it is the whole point, because even back then, the movie maker said, look, the lead character in that movie takes off in a space shuttle run by Pan Am, and he visits a space station run by Hilton. So even back then, they were talking about the notion of big business operating in low Earth orbit, and then you send your professional astronauts, your NASA astronauts, to go off and explore, you know, the moon or Mars or whatever. So that is something that the Obama administration apparently is leaning toward, because in addition to your space tourism, where people, you know, buy what's known as the Mick Jagger ticket, and you kind of go and throw up for 5 minutes and you come back, there is a company that's been hired by NASA to create a capsule that would resupply the International Space Station. It is a privately owned capsule launching on a privately owned rocket, and they're already talking about upgrading the cargo capsule so you can put people in there and launch them to the space station and bring them safely back to the Earth. So once that happens, the big deal with that is, number one, NASA's got a way to get to space, you know, after the shuttle goes away and we don't have another kind of rocket for a while, but also, it might be able to use competition between businesses to drive down the cost of putting a pound of something into orbit. Right now it's about $3,000 to put a pound of anything into Earth orbit. You want to go to the moon, it's $15,000. You want to take that same pound, send it to Mars, it's $140,000. So anything that will lower the cost might, in the end run, be able to sort of make space more accessible, less expensive to the average taxpayer, that sort of thing. So that sort of thing might actually help NASA with its goals.
All right, so privatization may be a very good thing for space exploration. We're talking to Pat Duggins, everybody. He is the news director at Alabama Public Radio. And, Pat, I'm going to make you king for the day. And you now have complete universal power. And if you were king for the day, what would you do in regards to exploration of space?
Well, I'd be a benevolent king, and I would ask the American people what they think. But since we're coming up with this scenario here, I think that it would probably be easier for the American people to swallow to send astronauts to go off and study the asteroid in 10 years. And then after that, use that technology to go off to visit the planet Mars. Now, the reason I like that is because I've covered both of NASA's shuttle disasters, and reporting on astronaut fatalities, it's not the average way that everybody wants to spend their day. If you go ahead and send astronauts to Mars straight from Earth, and you know how the problem up in orbit where they lose their muscle mass, they lose their bones, get weak, that sort of thing.
Yes.
Well, the same thing's going to happen all the way to Mars. So if they land physically on Mars, there's the possibility if they crash, they may not be able to save themselves. So some people are saying, hey, send people to asteroids first, let them train there and build the technology, and then instead of sending people directly to the surface of Mars, why don't you send your ship to one of Mars' moons, Phobos or Deimos, let the astronauts land there, there's no gravity to crash you, there's no atmosphere to burn you up, let them build their strength back up, and then from there, land on the surface of Mars that way. Now, if you go that route to go to Mars, then going to an asteroid actually makes sense, because an asteroid is very similar to one of Mars' moons, and you can go that way, which ostensibly would be safer for the astronauts.
Fascinating discussion. We've been talking to Pat Duggins, everybody, who is the news director at Alabama Public Radio, also author of the book Trailblazing Mars, NASA's Next Giant Leap. Pat, if people want to learn more about you, if they're intrigued by what it is that you're saying, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I would say it's almost like what Mark Twain said on Star Trek one time. Just go to the books. I'm all all of me is in there. So if you wanted to go either to Amazon.com or check your local bookstore, you can get copies there. If you happen to be in the nation's capital, I know the Smithsonian has some signed copies there. And I'm already working on NASA book number 3. So as soon as that comes along, hey, I might be back on your program.
Pat, this has been a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, Bill. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Take care now.